Someday, if I'm lucky, I'm going to be that guy, you know, because if I run long enough, I'll be last. But you know what? That'll be great. And so every day between now and then, it's just a gift. And I try and reframe that for myself when I'm having a tough day.
This podcast is brought to you by UCAN, Next Level Nutrition. Hey, Scott, it's just not for running down the trail. This stuff is so good, you'll eat it all day, and UCAN, it's good for you.
You know, it's not just products and fuel. It's a fueling strategy because it uses a different type of fuel, a superstarch. I have fallen in love with training with this stuff. My favorites go-to are the Edge Energy Gel. Comes in kind of like a little gel packet. It has that superstarch in there. Tastes great. And the other one that I put in my bottle now is the Energy Powder. And it fuels. It tastes great. And it goes down smooth.
My favorite, though, the Energy Bar. Tastes great. And it's good for me, too.
You can get 20% off if you go to our landing page. That's ucan.co/TRN. And enter the code TRN20. You'll get 20% off your order of UCAN Energy.
Happy birthday, John G. They're 9 years old, and instead of you bringing them a gift, Scott, they're going to give you a gift.
They're celebrating with up to 25% off selected gear at johng.com, including styles from their Spring Summer 21 collection that was inspired in India. That AFO multi-vent short that we've been talking about, it's on sale for 15% off.
Hey, both for men and women. And this stuff really looks good, Scott. I'm looking at the shirts, the hats, and the shorts. And you're going to get noticed on the trail with these. I like the looks of this stuff. Lots of color, lots of style.
The sale lasts through May 31st, just through Memorial Day. Midnight on the 31st, these sale prices go away. You, as a Trail Runner Nation member, get an additional 15% off by using the code TRN15.
Scott, they've got t-shirts, they have Vortex gloves, and they have a sling bag that you can wear. I really like this stuff.
Go to johng.com, enter the code TRN15 for an additional 15% off.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
just because the facts aren't accurate, don't worry about it. This is a podcast. This isn't. We don't even have a letterbox. Nobody's gonna write us. We don't even know where it is. I started to question myself. Maybe I'm a badminton player and not a runner.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman,
and I'm Scott War. And today we're gonna talk about failure. There's a guy named William Ritter that once said, failure is not the opposite of success. It is part of it. And we're going to change your paradigm about failures. I think that trail runners, often look at failures sometimes as part of your success or part of the journey. But sometimes we put it in that category that we don't want to see. We don't want to fail, right? I'm recently been reading a book called Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived, Joyful Life. And the authors are designers, product engineers, and they talk about how to design your life with failure as an option. So you go out and you say, I'm going to try something. And if you fail, that's no big deal. It's like designing a product. So the first iPhone, they go out and they design the iPhone and they make a prototype and they tested it. And it most likely failed. And then they take it back. What did we learn from it? They redesign it and they test it again. That's what we're going to talk about today, how failures can make us better runners. And to join us, we have a panel of experts. We have Adam Kimball. Don?
Well, Adam's been on the podcast before. You've heard him talk about his FKT on the 171-mile trip around Tahoe Rim Trail. He did it in 37 hours and 12 minutes. Certainly no failure there. And he was a former one baseball player too, the Division I. I didn't know that about you, Adam. There's a lot of things since Scott did some research here that I learned myself reading this. You didn't tell us that about a Division I baseball player. What position did you play?
I was a catcher, the position that runs the least of all the players.
but runs the game. And he was a winner at The Price is Right. Did you do the showcase?
Yeah, I lost my first game and then made it on the stage again and won the showcase showdown.
What did you win?
The coolest part was a trip to Japan. There was also a bunch of kitchen appliances that my parents just a couple of years ago had to get replaced. So they lasted about 10 years. And then a big screen TV.
Nice. And the winner of two self-supported multi-stage races, a podium finisher at 3 100-mile races and more. Adam has a lot of great things. You'd say, think, why would you have someone like this that's so successful on to talk about failures? Well, Adam, you called us and you talked about, we had a great discussion with a couple of running friends of mine about DNFs and how we can learn so much from them. And so why don't you introduce your friends and let's talk about why we should go DNF.
Yeah, so we are here today with my friends Jim O'Brien and Connor Crouch. Just a quick backstory of how we all came together. It's classic ultra running community, right? In 2016, I was preparing to run across the U.S. and using every opportunity I could to get myself prepared and have additional tools in the toolbox to be ready for anything to happen. So one of those things was I was doing some water running as a recovery tool. And I figured that could be something I could use along the way. And it just so happened that the instructor who was teaching me this fluid running, her name is Michelle. Michelle is Jim's wife and Connor's mom. So I met her initially, and then she introduced me to the two of them. And then just a little background on them. Jim he's been running for over 20 years. He's an accomplished ultra runner as of the last several years. He's run multiple 100-milers. Connor and I have crewed him and paced him at some of those 100-milers. And Jim and I connected very quickly in the beginning, much having to do with what we're discussing today. I think we both really realized that the mental side of the sport really appeals to us. And actually, listening to your episode with Dean, you know, when he talked about what it was that he felt, why people do what we do, you know, it's like discovering who you are as a person and what really makes you tick and that sort of thing. And I really got that vibe from Jim that he was pursuing that as well. He's a very accomplished person in his business life, and I think he was searching for that on the running side as well. And so we shared that, and Connor shares that as well. He's also a very accomplished runner. He's been running for 7+ years. And perhaps most notably on Connor's resume is he in marathons, notably the Boston Marathon, he is 1-0 against Galen Rupp.
Nice, Connor.
So yeah.
Claimed
a very wide array of experience here, and we've grown very close through our connection to the sport.
And so we were talking to Adam. It's been a while since we've talked to him, and he's become a friend. And I sent him a quick email, and I said, "Hey, Adam, we want to have you back on the podcast." And he goes, "Hey, I was just on a run with two of my pals, and we were talking about DNFs. Tell us a little bit about that conversation."
Yeah, so Jim and Connor both just visited Tahoe last weekend, and we got to share some miles on the trails, which was wonderful. And as always, you know, I don't know about you guys, but speaking personally, some of the best conversations that I've ever had in my life have been on runs. And so Jim and I sort of sparked this conversation about DNFs and how, I think for me personally, initially when I started out in the sport, I had the mentality of, you're going to have to drag me off the course to get a DNF, you know? And then as I sort of evolved in the sport and got more experience, I actually realized that in the right circumstance, I think it is the right choice, and you have to be the one to evaluate that. There's a lot of things that go into it. And so that was kind of where the conversation jumped off from.
Go ahead, Jim, please.
Things you were talking about, which was so interesting, is we were talking about Jim Walmsley, and maybe, you know, for people that aren't familiar, you could talk about his two DNFs at Western States and, you know, kind of how that seemingly brought him into, you know, the great runner he is today.
I'm gonna put a pause on that for 1 second, and you can certainly answer that, Adam, because I couldn't. But I like how we learned on the pre-show that Connor lives right down the road from Jim, and I noticed, I mean, from Jim Walmsley, and I noticed that Jim brings this topic up at the risk of Connor having to answer for it as he passes his house each day. So go ahead, Adam, explain what Jim set you up for.
I think ultimately what it comes down to is, and I think Jim is Jim Walmsley is a friend of mine as well, and I think he would tell you this, you know, the same as I would, but it's, for me in my life, there's been, whether it's a DNF or a situation where I've fallen short, a lot of times that can be the moment that you learn from, or the thing that sort of propels you to have success the next time around. So one thing that's interesting is, you know, like in 2000, so the first time that Walmsley had a mistake, he missed the turn. The next year he went out too fast, and he admitted later that it was a really hot day and he didn't make the adjustments that he thought maybe he should have. So he didn't let the day tell him what to do. He told the day what to do, and it didn't work out well. And so I think the collective experience of those things can set you up for a lot more success further down the road. For me, the first time I ran the Tahoe Rim Trail, I finished. I thought about dropping a million times, and my crew convinced me to get to the finish line, and I did. And then, you know, the second that I finished, I thought, I've learned so much from this. I've got to give it another shot. I didn't know when that would be, but it was one of those situations where I had that experience, and I knew I had to take what I had learned and use it moving forward.
Hey, Jim, why do we look at failure in our running accomplishments or our running? Why do we look at failure as a negative thing? Why do you suppose we try not to do it?
Such a great question, Scott, because I think, you know, when you're a runner, you don't, you know, the types of runs, say, like Adam's doing, when he's doing 100-miler, you don't go from couch to 100-miler, you know. So people that are running these distances are successful. You know, you've built up and you've had a lot of success just to get out and do 100-miler or a marathon. And you know, like you were talking in your discipline and consistency podcast about, yeah, I was going to do a 12-mile run. Well, most people, they wouldn't ever consider doing a 12-mile run. So there's this whole body of success that, you know, long distance runners have. And it's part of your not ego, but your psyche of, I'm a successful person and I run long and I don't quit. DNF means do not fail. And so when you end up with that failure, it can really sit on you and be very hard to deal with.
Connor, what are your thoughts on that?
I was just going to jump in and say, running is unique in this aspect as well, because there's really no hiding in running. There's no, there's no judging. There's no, qualitative assessment of what you're doing. Running, you have a time, either you finished or you didn't. You finished in a certain time or you didn't, and that's what makes it so easy to quantify failure, I feel like. And so there's really no hiding in a race like that, and it just makes it pretty difficult and can definitely put pressure on folks, I feel like, to not want to DNF.
Now, of all of us on this episode, Connor's the only one that has not DNF'd. Am I correct with that?
So
right. Connor, do you have any clouds hanging over your head thinking, I'm not going to do any of that failure stuff, I'm going to finish every race? Do you have that pressure that you put on yourself?
Connor's also the youngest. I just like to point that out.
I was going to say that's definitely a feature of experience rather than anything else. But I would say yes, until I really need to DNF, I'm going to say that I'm not ever going to DNF.
Well, you know, to finish these races, it's hard. It's not easy. And as you know, you're going to go through a few periods that are very dark and get better and very dark, and just alternates like that until you hit a finish line. And so we have to put DNF as a something we want to try to stay away from. Otherwise, we'd quit three or four times during the race. So we need to try to push back and keep the DNF away. But I like what Adam and Connor and both Jim are saying, is that if it's a learning experience, why try to steer clear of it? But I think that needs to be there. Otherwise, we just wouldn't finish. There needs to be that desire to stay away from that beast. I know I didn't say much there, but maybe that's inspired someone to have a cogent thought.
Donna, I think my fear of the DNF was, well, it'll become my default. You know, if I DNF once, then that's going to be on my mind. And every time I do another race, I'm just going to pull the plug. And I don't know if you guys have felt that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Jim. I think for me, there's definitely, it's interesting because you have the, once you have ripped the Band-Aid off, then you know you've been there, you know what that feels like, you know it is an option in your mind. But I always tell all of my athletes and myself that you go into any race or any event with your tangible motivations, because you've got to have the thing that you rely on when you want to throw in the towel. And so I think it's a matter of having that, knowing what you're out there to do. And then if there's something that detracts from that, or is going to present a situation where you think something could get in the way of your goals down the road. Like for me, one of my two DNFs was at Leadville in 2019. I'd run the Vermont 100 4 weeks earlier, took third there. It was the hottest race of my life, 100% humidity. I would have needed more time to recover. Plus the conditions made it, you know, that much harder to recover from. So I got out to Leadville. I knew early on my body was already starting to fail me. And then it got to a point where I thought, okay, I'm at the sort of crossroads where I can say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to drag myself across the finish line. Or I say, this is not going to be good for me. And I've got other goals to consider. And it might be best for me to swallow my pride, put my ego aside, and live to fight another day. And so I think there's definitely a big difference between, I think what Jim is saying is, you don't want to get to the point where that's the thing you always turn to. So it's kind of a delicate balance of knowing when it is the right choice and when you should fight through and try to get to that finish line.
Yeah. So I'm going to open this question up to the four of you. Do you think that DNF is a slippery slope? Do you think that once you have done it, it's going to come back easier? Or do you think it's going to make you a better runner so that you avoid it? Not so much motivation, but just making better decisions. So is the DNF a slippery slope? Does anybody want to tackle that one? Because I've got an answer to it, I'm sure. So if you guys don't have it, I'll start to make it something up.
I'll give my first shot at it. I think it is. I have two DNFs to my name, and both of them, what I learned from it is, if I would have just sat in the aid station and taken some time, had some food, and then continued, I could have finished those races. And so for me, it's not a slippery slope. For me, it was an education that if I would have just given myself some time, I could have completed both of those races. One of them, I was actually mad at myself because I had taken the bib off and I was getting a ride back to the starting line. And before I got to the starting line, I was going, I could finish this thing. Take me back there. But it was too late. So I don't think it's a slippery slope for me. I think it was just dumbness and maybe inexperience, knowing I thought I was done. But if I would have given my body a little time to recover and sat down and enjoyed the aid station and had some beverages and talked with the aid station workers for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I would have been better.
How about you guys?
I was just to piggyback off of what Scott said there. I think that illustrates perfectly what I was trying to say earlier, just about like knowing when to make that decision and when it's the right decision. I think, you know, Scott admittedly there felt like maybe it wasn't the right decision. Whereas in, you know, that the Leadville situation for me, while I was still as disappointed as I would have been in if I, you know, no matter what the circumstances were and not finishing, I walked away from that feeling like the only thing that was getting in my way was my pride. You know, it was, I knew that that the best thing for me to do was to move on. And so I was kind of hung up on that. And actually a great analogy or a great sort of picture that Jim painted about this when we were talking over the weekend was, he said, everybody is in their own movie. And a lot of us think that everybody is watching our movie, but really they're focused on their movie. So the point is, like, Scott, there's not going to be somebody 20 years from now that's like, I remember when you, unless they were with you when it happened, I remember when you DNF'd X race in this year, you know, like, you're the one that's going to remember that, not them. So while you don't want that to create a situation in your mind to make that slippery slope, if you're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself, I think that's like a situation where you may want to, where the decision has to be made.
Right, Adam. For me, DNFing gave me a lot more confidence because I was actually really fearful of it. The near miss, though, that I had when you and Connor were crewing me a couple years ago at a 100-miler really made a deep impression on me because I sort of blew up like at mile 29 and I got really bad leg cramps. And I kind of struggled to the next aid station. And I saw you guys. I was ready to quit because I thought I can only walk. I can walk. I can walk the next 63 miles, but I don't want you guys to be out here waiting for me. And I'm just done. And you put me back together. You're like, just get back out there. The pain's going to go away. And you kind of like pushed me down the road. And I finished. And I actually, you know, it was my best time. For that distance. And what I learned from that, that really kind of was good and bad, was that I had been preparing for that race for 6 months and preparing for that moment for 6 months when I knew the pain was going to hit, the low moment was going to hit. And I broke so hard mentally. And it really bothered me that I could work on it and then get broken. But then on the other side, I got put back together. So it's just to me an endlessly fascinating series of moments.
Boy, Jim, you just dropped a real set of words that I'm going to carry with me, and that is preparing for that moment. You know, before the race, we go out, we do hill repeats, we do, you know, some speed work and some long stuff. But preparing for that moment mentally, rehearsing, I'm going to get hit by a truck. And I'm going to stand back up, and this is what it's going to feel like. And I'm going to visualize improving and getting better and being in good shape again, preparing for that moment. Oh, I like that, Jim. That was good. Yeah, Connor.
Connor, let me just jump in there real quick. Jim, do you think if you were alone and you didn't have the crew with you, you didn't have Adam and Connor there at those aid stations to give you the encouragement? Do you think the outcome would have been different?
I would have quit.
That's interesting. That's another good golden nugget, that you got to have a good crew that understands you and knows how to push.
And to that point, Scott, I think you have to have not only a good crew, but the right people for certain situations. Classic example, my wife crews me at all of my big races and my big expeditions. And she's the one that if I'm broken and I'm thinking, you know, do I keep going here? I talk to her and her response as a wife is, yeah, like I see that you're in terrible pain. Let's end this now. And so she's there, but I always have other people there as the decision makers to say, wait a second, let's reevaluate this, you know, because Karen, my wife, would say, yeah, drop, you know, I love you. I don't want to see you hurt like this. But, you know, my other friends are like, no, man, you're here to do a job and you got to go do that job.
Connor, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I feel like what Don and Adam have said. It's an important testament to really having a good crew and having important conversations with your crew before you do a race like that. I know when we've crewed Jim, we often have a nice dinner the night before and sit down and the rest of us are drinking beers. Jim's drinking his water. But we're asking him questions about what do you want to talk about on this run? At what point? Like, when do you think you'll start to struggle? What words do you want to hear? What's your mantra going to be? And I just think having those conversations before the race with your crew where they can tell you, no, you're fine. You need to keep going. Or an Adam situation where someone's really going to know that you're in tough shape and maybe it's time to call it.
You know, I like the thing that we've talked about in the past, which are simple rules. And if you come into an aid station, the simple rule I like to use, if you're the only one at that aid station that thinks you should drop, then you probably shouldn't.
you know, if you come in just telling a sad story, but you can't convince anybody that that's how you really are, then and they don't recognize it. If they don't come up to you and tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, Don, don't you think maybe you should sit down here and get a ride out of here? Because you look awful, Adam."
This is so funny that you say that, Don. I just had a conversation with my buddy, Kevin Sawchuk, you guys know Kevin? Yeah, great guy. Yeah. He lives in Truckee now. He's actually the medical director for our Castle Peak 100K here in August. So I had a meeting with him recently, and he was telling me about when he was working as one of the medical guys at Western States for many years. He recalled certain times when people would come into an aid station, and he said if they put up a strong enough argument for why they should, you know, be pulled from the race, then his response would be, "You're arguing way too hard right now. That means you're good to go. Get out of here." He's like, now the people that couldn't say anything and are laying on their back and in really bad shape, sometimes he'd pull them. But the ones that were putting up a fight, he said, "Nope, you still got it in you. You got to get out of here."
You know, that's funny. I tell you this story because exactly that mile 55, Michigan Bluff at Western States, Kevin Sawchuk, medical guy at that aid station. And I came in and he said, "What are your excuses?" And I gave him like five. And every one of them, he goes, "No, that's not good enough." I go, "It's hot." He goes, "It's hot for everybody. What else you got?" And he just had me go through them. And he goes, "Not good enough. Walk to the next aid station and you'll finish the race." So I owe him that buckle. So you're right. And a good guy there and a tough one too.
Hey, Jim, tell us about before we should have been recording, before we restarted the recording. You're talking about a 100-mile attempt during the COVID last year. Tell us a little bit about that and how that ended up.
Last year, I was signed up for a 100-miler. Then COVID happened, and I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. But I was really enjoying the training. Adam is my coach. And I decided I was going to do my own 100-miler, same date as the race, and just keep doing the training. And I set up a 5-mile course from my house so I could use my house as my aid station. And I was going to do 25-mile loops. And I ended up DNFing at mile 90. I wasn't prepared for the volume of pavement running, and my left leg swelled up considerably, and I ended up walking. And I just decided I was done. I didn't want to injure myself and not be able to run for the next few months. And it turned out to be just a really cool, life-changing experience for me. I had not DNF'd in a race before that. And what I loved about the DNF was I found my edge that day. I found exactly where I was right up at the point of being injured. And at least that's what I believed. And I didn't really feel badly about DNFing because I found that edge. And for me, that's the joy of the race, is if you can devote yourself so fully to the race where you hit that edge, that's a great day. And rarely have I ever experienced that. And that DNF was, you know, I just look at that and go, that was a real run.
Again, to reference the conversation you guys had with Dean, I think I've told people so many times over the years that I really feel like I wouldn't fully understand who I am if not for ultra running. You put yourself in these situations and it helps you to discover how you deal with the craziest of circumstances, how you bounce back, what you're like in those lowest of low moments. And I think like what's really cool about Jim's story there is that he not only discovered that, but then felt totally content in where he had landed and that entire experience. And I think like that's part of the journey too, is just the fulfillment. You know, like you guys have heard, I'm sure, the saying that like the training is the real joy in the journey, and then the race day is just one day, right? It can go great, it can not go great, it can happen somewhere in between, but just having fulfillment regardless of how that plays out is a testament to Jim's mentality and how he approached that, I think.
Well, you know, Adam, as you started that discussion point there, you said getting out there and spending some time with yourself. And that's one of the things I just love about the sport, is if you really want to get to know who Adam is or Jim O'Brien or Connor, who these people are, get out there and run with yourself, because you'll get introduced to who that person is, How do you act when it gets hard? How do you keep pushing yourself? Do you lay down? Do you get up? And can you discover a person inside of you that you never knew? And just because you're not moving, just because you may need to sit on that rock, doesn't mean that you failed. Doesn't mean that you're weak. It's part of your strategy. I'm going to be smart enough to sit on a rock, to get up, and then to move further than I ever would have had I not done that, because I'm a planner, I'm a strategist, I'm a winner, and I can get it done. And that's what I love about this sport. I always say it once again, is if you want to know who you are, you've got to go out and do something like that and get yourself introduced to who you are inside. And I love that part. Just love it.
Yeah.
Connor's been nodding his head up and down like a bobblehead. I want to know what you're thinking right now,
and then,
Connor.
And then Jim has a follow-up, and who knows what you're going to say, Scott. You can write it down. Go ahead, Connor.
Yeah, I feel like Don was reading my mind in a way. The thing that I always think of about running, and it ties in with the challenges of running, the challenges when you've already DNF'd, is what can you learn from the experiences that you've had? And there's a great quote from Marcus Aurelius that says, "The impediment to action advances action." And it's this idea that we are constantly faced with challenges and hardships, and what you can make of those challenges and trying to embrace them as opportunities rather than just simply challenges or obstacles that are in your way, are really the moments in life where you can learn. And I think that's an important lesson for DNFs, although I haven't DNF'd, so maybe this is easier said than done. Is what can you take away from the DNF? Like Scott, you said that your DNFs had been, if you realized that if you just moved past that aid station and went another 2 miles down the trail, you would have been fine. But you wouldn't have learned that if you hadn't DNF'd. So in that next race, you know that, you have that in your back pocket, and that's something that you can move on from.
I'm looking for the edge that Jim talked about. If you can see my hands, I'm making a level where the edge is, and I'm so far away from that edge when I DNF. I want to be like Jim and climb all the way up to the peak of that edge before I quit. Go ahead, Jim.
Touching on what Don was talking about, for me, short training run is a journey of self-discovery. And there's a great movie called Desert Runners. It traces four runners doing four ultra marathons in different deserts. And one of the guys is asked, you know, why is he doing this? And he said, it's about me versus me. And I love that, because to me, that's what, a 100-miler or a run can be, is there's this war going on with yourself where, you know, you're having a low, you want to quit, you're body is saying this is a really bad idea, and you have to get your brain to override that.
I'm gonna get in front of you, Scott, because otherwise it'll lose its appropriate timing for the comment. That it doesn't have to be a war, though, Jim. I would propose that it could be a dance with yourself. It could be a dance with the edge, and you could do a waltz. You could do whatever you need to do, the limbo. You could do whatever movement that you need to do, but I don't think it necessarily has to be aggressive as artful.
Yeah. My dance is a pop and lock. That's kind of that's the form that I have when I run down the trail. Here's the topic that I want to get your opinion on. You know, we're talking about DNFs at races, okay? 95% of what we do is training. And I recently had a crappy week. About 2 weeks ago, I had three runs in a row that I was thinking, I'm too old to run. I'm hanging the shoes up. I don't ever want to put these things on again. I mean, they were not super long runs, but they were hard workouts, and three in a row, just terrible, terrible failures. And for some reason, just because of the longevity and things I've learned about myself and through running many years, I thought, I can't have a fourth, can I? I can't have a fourth bad one, or I can't have a fifth bad one. Eventually, there's going to be a good one. And sure enough, it only took three. The fourth one, I ended up having a great run. I had a great week the next week. And as I look back and try to learn from those failures, you know, what did I do? What did I eat? How long did I sleep? Was I recovered? and trying to figure out why were those three runs bad. And I think that's important too in our training, that that failures, even in training, can be good experiences and learning for us.
Yeah, to follow that up, Scott, as a running coach, one of my, it sounds sadistic maybe to say this, but one of my favorite things is when I receive feedback from one of my athletes describing a run that's gone terribly wrong. And the reason it's one of my favorite things is because they proceed to tell me how they worked through all of those things. And when you really look, when you're like, I think we don't do this enough, but when you reflect on a training block, maybe for some kind of a race, surely it doesn't go well the entire time. You know, there's going to be, if not, you know, three or more in a week, you know, you're going to have over the course of that, you know, several months, you're going to have several runs that didn't go according to plan. And I think those are the things that set you up for those moments on race day when you want to cash it in, but you've been building this momentum all along. And so I actually really love that, because I think those things, while maybe not significant in our mind, are as important as anything else in getting us to the finish line.
Hey, Adam, you played Division I baseball. What did they call that? A slump breaker? Or you're in a slump, right?
Don, that's so one of the reasons that I feel my baseball career positioned me well for ultra running is exactly what you just said. Baseball is such a mental sport. You can be the best player on a team, but if you're in a slump, the ball looks like it's a golf ball coming at you, you know? Mm. And then conversely, if you're feeling good and everything's going well, it looks like they're throwing a beach ball to you. So I really think that the two of those sports, while not at all the same on paper, are actually quite similar.
So how do you break out of a running slump? I'm gonna send this to Connor first, and then Jim, and then Adam, you can come in with your baseball experience. Connor, how do you overcome a running slump? And I'm taking notes, by the way, because I'm taking notes because I'm gonna use this next time I have a three bad run week.
I think the method you took is the one that I would take. You just have to keep running. You might have to dial it back if it's really something with your body. But when I've hit those funks, I know I've done training blocks where I'm doing two big workouts a week, and back-to-back weeks, all those workouts just are a bust. I'm not running as fast as I want to. I'm bonking way earlier than I think I should be. And I think all you can really do is take note of that, see if there's something that you can learn from that. Maybe I'm not sleeping enough. Maybe I should be eating something different before the run, but I feel like you just have to keep going after it and trying to learn from those slumps.
How about Jim? Have you had some slumps?
Jim is my running coach, and I was actually doing a speed workout that he assigned me today, and it wasn't going well. And you know, I was struggling along, and I just tried to be okay. You know, like, it was three mile repeats. And the first one was, you know, was really, really a slow mile. And I was just like, well, I don't have it today, but I'll try and do a little better on the next one. And I did. And then I tried to beat that on the next one, and I did. And I felt better about it. And, you know, the reframe that I try and use sometimes, it doesn't always work, is that there's so many people that can't run that would love to run. And
oh, that's good.
That what we're doing is so precious. You know, we just have this day to day to get the run. And, you know, Connor's old neighbor is a lady named Jill who has a heart condition, and she's a runner, and she's literally last in any race that she does because she can't go very fast because of her pacemaker. And I look at Jill and go, well, lucky I'm going to be that guy. You know, because if I run long enough, I'll be last. But you know what? That'll be great. And so every day between now and then, it's just a gift. And I try and reframe that for myself when I'm having a tough day.
That's good stuff right there. That's great stuff. I'm going to paraphrase because I want you to get this right, Jim. If I run long enough, I'll be last. Is that what you said? That's beautiful. I'm gonna make t-shirts. Adam, how do you break out of a slump?
And then I'll share my guaranteed slump buster when you're done, Adam.
Ooh, yeah. There you go. Ooh. So in baseball, we would
ice
always,
cream.
Yeah, in baseball, we would always rub our hat just like that. No, I'm just kidding. My answer is pretty similar to, actually, it's a combination of both Connor and Jim. You guys know I'm a glass half full kind of guy. And I think for me, if I have a bad week, it's taking those bad runs and looking at what went wrong and seeing if I can establish what I can do the next time to improve from that. And then maybe even more importantly, looking at the runs that went well or maybe went okay and saying, you know what, that's what I can build off of. Had three bad ones, but maybe, you know, two or three other not so bad ones, and taking that and moving forward with that.
We're going to take a short break away from this DNF discussion to talk about something that we think is very important and something that can take you out of a race if you don't have it dialed in. And that's blisters, and that's foot performance. And that's where BOA comes in. They'll deliver it for you.
BOA Fit Systems partner with the best shoe companies out there and make them even better by providing these micro adjusting lace systems that connect you to the shoe much better and improve your performance.
The BOA Fit system is engineered to help you perform at your peak with increased connectivity, precision, and control.
We are going to be giving away with BOA 10 free pair of the new La Sportiva Cyclone shoes. This is how you enter to win. Go to boafit.com/TRN and register to win on July 16th or thereabout. We're going to give away 10 free pair. Now let's get back to our discussion about failure.
So if you've done all of those things and you're still in a slump, I'm going to give you the very best surefire way to get out of it. You go buy.
I'm ready.
Yeah. You go buy a new pair of shoes. You got to get a new watch. You've got to go get a new hydration pack. You've got to go spend some money so you feel better about your running. And that will help.
Actually, to that point, Don, this is, you know, I'm a sponsored professional ultra runner, but I still, with my shoes, I still wear them as long as I stretch them as long as I possibly can. And honestly, there's times when I go out on a run and I'm like, something's not right. And then I put on a new pair of shoes and I'm like, oh, that's what wasn't right. So, I mean, that really can make a difference for sure.
You know what? I'm just thinking, when I don't run right, I put on new shoes and it's still not right. I think my problem is not the shoes. It's the guy wearing the shoes.
You need a shoes, a watch, and a different pair of shorts. I mean, you're a hard case, Scott. You've got
a pair of socks. A new pair of socks is amazing.
Well, there you go. So you subscribe to the theory. It works.
Yeah, that's a good golden nugget, Don. I mean, I think we're going to put that on the wall of gold nuggets.
I mean, Coach Adam would certainly, he'd see an athlete and he's going to think, you know, this is at least a four-piece purchase. This person is deep.
So I'm going to take the conversation just a little bit philosophic here. Ego is the enemy that we're all trying to battle, I guess you would say. And I think that experienced trail runners, experienced runners, slowly understand what ego is and can suppress that ego. Why do you think that is? And I call back to an episode, one of my favorite episode podcasts that we did on vulnerability, where, you know, putting yourself out there to the world with that idea of balance of ego and vulnerability that, you know what, I don't care what happens. I'm going to go out there and try it, even if there is a failure. So I don't know if there was a question there, but how does the ego balance in this running realm? Any thoughts on that?
I'll go. I think your running is so humbling. At least it has been for me. I mean, I used to do a lot of road races, and I was beaten by pregnant women, small boys, you know, much older, you know, men and women. And you start to learn that You're not as good as you think you are. And you also get humbled by conditions, by the environment. You know, you go out thinking you're going to have a great run or a great race, and it doesn't go as planned. And you start to develop this tool chest of, I call it recalibration. You're just having to recalibrate in the moment and say, it's not going as I planned. What do I do? You know, I thought I was going to get a PR. How do I, you know, now I'm on my way to a PW. You know, how do I deal with it? And, you know, how do I work through this? And those have been some of my best runs, but they're very humbling.
Yeah. And I, you know, as you were just saying that, Jim, I flash back to what Scott said at the beginning of the episode, just talking about how, you know, like, so an example for me, in my life, I've had several races, expeditions where I've announced that I'm going to do something and I have no idea how it's going to go. And I have to let go of the ego side of it if it doesn't go well, and learn from it and move on. But so many, I've had people say to me before, I'm impressed by your ability to put yourself out there, you know, potentially fail or not succeed at your goal, but then just keep moving forward. And for me, it goes back to what Scott was saying about, you know, the Apple analogy that he had, where if I don't put myself out there and go after this, then I'm never going to know what I'm capable of. But if I go out and do it and I don't succeed, then maybe the next time I will succeed. And I found personally that when I push my ego aside, that's when I have huge breakthroughs, because it allows me to say, you know what, I'm going to give this the best attempt I have now. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to try something else after that and see if I can succeed in that. And I think having that mentality of getting out of the way of yourself is a big part of that.
Can you talk a little bit about your TransCon, where you were attempting to break the record for going and running across the United States, what happened, and then what you did and how you dealt with it?
That's a great place to go, because I think for something that didn't go as I had hoped, that was one of the experiences in my life that I learned the most from and grew the most from. Pretty early on, the 50 plus mile days on pavement, Jim referenced his experience with that extra pavement. I'm a trail, mostly trail runner now. I still run some road races, but 50 miles a day on pavement started to really, really crush me. And ultimately I started having all kinds of injury issues pretty early on, a couple weeks in, and again, was strongly considering, you know, giving up on it and heading home. But then what I realized was I was getting, there was people that were responding to what we were doing, because we had publicly announced this thing. And I told people I'm going to go for this record. Who knows how it's going to go. Because I had publicly announced that, there was a lot of people on social media reaching out, especially once things started going south, and saying, hey, this is really amazing that Adam's struggling so much, but not giving up. Him and his team are putting one foot in front of the other and going out there day after day. And ultimately, the overarching theme of the entire run for me was that I was never meant to break this record. In hindsight, I was meant to put myself out there, struggle through this, and connect with thousands of people all over the US and all over the world who had their own struggles and identified with what I was doing. You know, if I had, I always said afterwards, I felt like if I had blown through and broken the record, there was a lot of people that would not be able to identify with that. It's like, wow, I could never do that. Good for you. But because I was struggling so much, everyone can identify with that. And people were voicing that to me. And it became this mission to then run for these people who were supporting us and what we were doing. And it created this incredible web of positivity. It was a really cool experience.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Adam's story with the TransCon speaks to is really, at least what I think, is that in the process of shedding your ego, it's kind of about figuring out what is within your control and what's outside of your control. And so, like, for Adam's example, outside of his control is how his body responds to 50 mile days on asphalt like that. So he can't take that personally. That's completely outside of his control. But what's in his control is how he responds to that. And he just kept pushing and pushing. And like you said, people really related with that. And that's really exciting and really speaks to Adam's character as a runner and a person.
Yeah, Jim, I see you want to go, but I want to ask this to Connor, and maybe it's Adam that has the answer to it, but maybe a way for Adam to respond to 50 miles a day is to decrease his pace and kick it back to 40 miles. So that's a little bit in his control. So I just pitched that up there. Where does that fit into your comment, Connor?
Yeah, I think, and this kind of ties in with the DNF stuff as well. It's all lessons learned. And like Jim said, always recalibrating and trying to figure out what you can do in the moment to accomplish the goals that you've set, or again, what's in your control and what isn't. In Adam's situation, what was in his control was not continuing to push it so hard, taking a few easy days to rest his legs, but then continuing on and striving for the goal that he'd set.
Yeah, good lesson.
Yeah, definitely. And Don, to that point, I think, you know, if I say this, likely it's always in the back of my head to go after another transcon. I it was so painful that it's crazy that I'm even saying that, but it's always in the back of my mind. But one thing for certain that I would adjust is easing into it more. I actually think starting with, you know, if you're planning to average 50, 60 mile days, whatever it is, I think starting 20, 25% less than that and letting your body really get into the rhythm is a smart move. And I wish, in hindsight, I wish I had taken that approach with the first one.
Jim, I interrupted you. Go ahead, please.
To me, the beautiful paradox of Adam's run was he DNF'd on the record, but he decided to keep going. You know, pretty early in, he knew he wasn't going to make the record, but he decided to keep running. It was sort of like a Forrest Gump thing. He just decided to keep running. And today, people don't say, oh, you know, we don't look at you, highly because you didn't break the record. Everyone's like, you ran across the United States. So actually, he didn't set out what he wanted to accomplish, but he sort of accomplished something bigger because he kept going, and now he's known as a guy who ran across the United States. And he could have DNF'd and he wouldn't have that. And it's in a way kind of changed his life.
You know, we often talk about the good stories that we tell on the trail don't come from those perfect races or perfect outings. It's all about the train wrecks, right? and how you were able to recover from a train wreck. And those are the fun stories.
Adam.
Just going to say, to Jim's point, I mentioned this when we were having this discussion last weekend. I literally have not had a single person come up to me in my life and mention anything about the record. If they're talking about the transcon, it's tell me what was it like to run across the US? That's crazy. You know? So this thing that was like the ultimate goal for me in hindsight really doesn't matter because it's all about the story and the friendships and the experiences we had along the way.
Hey, and most people that you say, hey, I ran a marathon or a 50-mile run or a 100-mile run, a time wouldn't mean anything to them anyway. They really don't know what that means. Did it take you a day or a week? I don't know. But you ran 100 or 50 miles, a marathon? What is time? Time is only important to us.
What the record for running across the U.S. is?
Adam didn't get it. I know that. But
I have no idea.
I don't either.
Connor, do you know what the record is? Jim probably knows because he's a studious guy. What's the record, Jim? What is it, Adam?
That's what it used to be. It got lowered to like 42 or 43.
Oh.
See, that's the other part of this. You know, the majority of people have no idea what the record was or is.
And, right? And you know, I've mentioned to you guys I'm a motivational speaker. I still, my crew filmed some fun videos during that run. I use that content all the time. So it's like, it's like Jim said, in many ways, it's changed my life. And it's funny because when I set out, if you had told me you're going to finish in this amount of days, you know, you're going to be in pain for the vast majority of it, I would have thought to myself, that's a huge failure, but it ended up being a really big success.
And no one would have hired you if you would have set the record as a motivational speaker. No one would have hired you.
Yeah, there's no story in setting the record, but plenty to tell about what you went through.
Hey, I have one last question, if I may. Jim, you seem like you've run a lot. You have a lot of experience. Why do you have a coach? And what advantage does that give you?
That is such a great question, Scott. I'm a lifelong learner, And I came to the, I did my first ultra, and I got a training program off the web. It was actually Ultra Ladies training program. And
I wouldn't admit that, Jim.
He has no ego. Don't worry about it. He's pushed that off, Scott.
Although if I would have picked that one, I would have failed at the ladies program because they're way better than I am. Go ahead, Jim.
Teased me about that quite a bit. But I just, you know, wasn't satisfied with how the first ultra went. And I decided to hire Adam because he's a great coach. He's a great runner. And it's worked out really well because he's kind of dialed me in. I just do the workouts, and I actually run a lot less under his program. And the last, you know, ultra I did, I don't think I ran more than 30 miles for the longest run. But it was like, this is what Adam's got me doing. I'm going to do it and just trust the process. So, I just want to get better, even though, you know, I'm 61 years old, my body's, you know, fading, but I can still get better relative to where I was in the last couple of years. And that's why, you know, I'm working with Adam.
And guys, I feel like I've maybe we've even talked about this before, but I once was listening to an audiobook about, it was about coaching and leadership. And it said, if you yourself are a coach, then 100% you should have a coach because you believe in the power of coaching. And Jim is an executive coach on the business side of things. And so he sees the value of, you know, it, like if you believe in your ability to make someone better, then someone can make you better. And so when I heard that, I was like, that's a really great point. And the same reason that I have a coach as a coach as well.
Well, and I think when it comes to the topic at hand, failure, I think it's good to have a coach to help you put that failure in perspective. You know, we can all learn from our own failures, but I think a coach or a good friend or a training partner or a crew or a pacer, they can help put a little bit a different perspective because they have a different lens that they're looking at. And I think that's important.
I've got a quick last one for the round table here. I'm just interested to know from the group of four of you, is your best run your fastest finish time run, or was it a different run? You know, for the outcome of the race. You know, I've never run a marathon or a 50 mile that fast. Would your fastest run be your quote unquote best run or a different race? Is that a question that makes sense?
I've only done marathons. My one ultra I bailed on because of COVID, but my fastest marathon, I would not say is my best. I would say my best was running in Boston. I think it was 2019 or maybe 2018, whatever year had the absolutely crazy weather, with like the 20 mile an hour headwinds, nonstop rain and like 35 degrees. I think, again, the mental strain of kind of pushing through that, it is not the best marathon that I've run, but I think what I had to go through mentally and physically that race, I like to think of that as my best race.
Yeah, great answer. Who's next?
For me, it was my 90-mile DNF. And the reason I would say that is my kids came over to the house. Friends and family were there. Adam showed up. And I was just doing these five-mile loops and, you know, checking in at home every 5 miles. And it was a very kind of peaceful type run. And I got to see the whole day change in my neighborhood, you know, starting in the dark and then seeing it get sunny and then, you know, dusk coming on. It was a really kind of beautiful experience, even though, you know, I didn't achieve my goal.
Did you get some support from your neighbors? They was like, Jim, what are you doing out here?
Eventually, people were drinking beer and having pizza, and I was like this guy that would wander in every once in a while, but you know, there was almost a party going on.
How about you, Adam? Best race, the fastest race, or a different race?
No, a different race. I think probably my three best races of my life were all races that I went in with X time goal, still finished really well, like either won the race or was on the podium, but finished considerably slower because the conditions were insane. And, those are, I mean, it's immediately, those are the ones that come to mind. The ones where you know, you talk to somebody else that ran the race and it's like, do you remember how hot that was? You know, like I told you guys earlier, the Vermont 100, it was only in the low 90s, but the humidity was 100%. I went in with a 15:30 time goal. I finished 3 hours behind that, but was third overall. And I just remember I was warming up. The race started at 4:00. I did a mile warm up at 3:45 in the morning, and I could feel the humidity at 3:45, and I knew I was in for a long day. So those are the type of races that for me personally really stick with me.
Yeah. Great stuff. I think we learned a lot from our DNFs. We learned a lot from talking about them. We learned that we give ourselves permission to have it happen to us as long as there's a reason for it happening and for the outcome. If we can take something away from it, then it's not failure at all. Adam.
Don and Scott, I want to hear, what about you guys? Is your best race your fastest or a different one?
I'm still waiting for my fastest.
Don, I want to hear what your answer
well,
is.
Well, you know, if I'm somewhere and somebody asked me about my best race, it wouldn't be the one that went without issues. It would have to be the one that I was sitting down trying to figure out a way to get myself out of it. And I can't tell you how many races weren't DNFs because there wasn't a car around me. I'm halfway in between an aid station and I would have dropped right then. But I finished it because I didn't have a way out. And so I think I've DNF'd many, many times during races, but pulled myself out before I got back to an aid station. But my best and my most proud race wasn't one that I came in at my fastest time. Scott.
And I would say probably my best race was the first 50K I did, my first ultra. And I have no idea. And until I'm sure there's listeners out there that had the same situation. And maybe you guys did or not. I remember coming in the last 200 yards. Luckily I was able to put it together before anyone saw me, but I started bawling. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what came over me, but there were tears coming out of my eyes. And luckily I was able to put myself together because I have this ego issue before anybody saw me. But, you know, that was the time where I realized I could do hard things, stuff that I never thought I could do.
On that note, Scott, you just reminded me. So I had to share this was before I was an ultra runner. The first time I qualified for the Boston Marathon was at the Go St. Louis Marathon. And I crossed the finish line a minute, I think, underneath my qualifying time, and saw my wife and just immediately started crying. It was just one of the, I didn't anticipate it at all. It just kind of came on. And so I feel that. Yeah.
I had no idea. I don't know where it came from. And it hit me that quick.
Well, I'll repeat, if you really want to get to know who you are and meet yourself, the true you, it happens at a finish line. And sometimes it happens in the middle, but it's going to happen. And I think that's what drives us, why we're a tight community and why we keep doing it, because we kind of like the people that are inside of us. You know, they're good to the core.
Hey, Adam, let's put a plug in for your coaching. Where can someone become an awesome runner like Jim?
Well, you can either reach out to me on my website, adamkimble.com, or my coaching team is Run on Dirt Coaching. You can go to runondirtcoaching.com and reach out there.
And real quick, Adam, tell us a little bit of you have a project going with these other two jokers. Tell us, give us a little elevator speech on that.
So Jim came to Connor and myself, I don't know, a year and a half ago, something like that, and said he had this idea marinating in his brain, and he pitched it to us, and we were both on board immediately. He wanted to sort of come up with a running journal that was like, in our opinion, there's kind of two journals. There's the journal your thoughts journal, and there's a what's the weather, how many miles did you run journal. And we wanted to come up with a running journal that was a combination of those two things. So the three of us, for about a 2 month period, we journaled either before or after every run we did for those 2 months. And then we compiled all of that together and did some things to tie it together. And we're coming out with a running journal this fall. So we're really excited about it. We're actually in the editing is pretty much done. We're in the proofing stage of all the designs. and it looks really great. And I think people are going to respond really well to it. So we'd love to, when the journal does come out, we'd love to get you guys some copies, and then both for you personally, and then maybe some copies for you to give away to some Patreon members.
Real quick, Jim, let me just ask a quick question. Maybe you're going to clarify this. Is this a journal that I write in, or is it a published journal of what you guys wrote? So it's not okay.
No, Don likes his books short and sweet. So these are essays that are maybe 200 words, and then there's a space for you to write whatever hits you based on reading it and your run. And because we don't like DNFs, there's no dates, so you don't have to feel like you failed if you didn't put in Tuesday, January 13th. It's a blank date journal, and it's just meant to inspire people to let them write about this journey that we're all on together. Each run we think changes us and puts us into a different position. And the journal is just an attempt to let people record that.
And just to clarify, the hope behind having our entries in there is that the reader will read that, and maybe that will spark something in them to record on their own. So we our stuff is sort of as a prompt, but also just there for your enjoyment as well.
Well, that sounds really interesting. Thanks for coming up with that, guys. Hey, look forward to seeing it.
We really enjoyed this discussion. We know that you had it a week or so ago and get a chance to revisit. Hopefully it was similar, it paralleled a bit, but you can never reproduce something exactly. We really enjoyed the conversation. Connor, it was great to meet you. We know you're extremely fast over in Flagstaff. We'll make sure we stay clear if we see you coming up behind us. And Jim, it was great to meet you on this thing. And Adam, as always, it's great to have you back. You're a fantastic orator. You're full of excitement, energy, and wisdom, and we appreciate you coming on.
I say this with complete honesty. I never have as much fun on a podcast as I do with the two of you. So thank you guys for hosting. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Now, don't be afraid to go out and DNF.
Mas.
We'd like to thank our Patreon supporters for helping make this possible. We appreciate their contributions and hope they're getting ready for the Cocopelli 1000.
Do we have more information about the Cocopelli Run 1000?
It's 1,000 miles.
Or kilometers.
It depends on where you're running.
We'd also like to thank our Patreon business supporter, Doug Crumley with Crumley & Associates. He's part of our nation. He's a runner, and he loves to help people perform at their best. Crumley & Associates can be found at DougCrumleyJr.com. They're a private wealth advisor service that is part of the Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC.
Hey, TRN is produced by Doug Mayer and his dog, Izzy, and hosted by two hacks, Scott, you and I.